The Secretary of State's office is a great undersung position in state government. It's really actually an apolitical office. The Secretary of State has no direct ability to generate legislation. They do have rulemaking authority within the purview of the Secretary of State's office, but most of what they do is government administration, and they do a lot of important government administration, and that is the business entities section, which in most states would be the equivalent of a Department of Commerce. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that we always want to do is make sure that the rules and regulations that we are having business entities create and operate under are efficient rules. They're not overburdensome, and they don't cost a lot to the bottom line of the business, either in time or fiscally, so that the businesses can come here and flourish. And, you know, there's a disconnect in our business communities and our business operations in the state right now. And as Secretary of State, I feel that would be one of the problems that I need to solve. Is overall, we have been rated numerous times nationally as one of the top five places for business-friendly regulation and entities to come form and be. But in reality, we're in the bottom five of actual shovels in the ground and companies moving here. That's huge. That is a huge disparity in being able to, you know, what we're trying to achieve. Mm-hmm. So, you know, yes, it's fine that we have all of these things and we've set up to be, you know, this business-friendly location, but people and businesses are not coming here. And so we have to find out the real reasons why they're not coming here. And over the years, I've heard some, and those are some of the things that I'd like to address.
So what would be the thing that you would need to change to improve on that?
Well, you know, Wyoming's one of those Western country cultures, and you know, if we want to diversify our economy, we're going to get corporations in here and companies in here that they're bringing employees of all ethnic makeups. So we have to ensure to them that Wyoming will welcome every one of their employees that they bring into the state to set up their entity, regardless across the board. Mm-hmm. You know, and there's some issues there that we have that we don't necessarily fall on the political side of being welcoming to a lot of groups. And so we need to resolve that. We need to publicly come out and, you know, that's one thing that you can't statutorily change. I realize that, you know, morals and ethics are not what you want to try to put fences around statutorily. It just can't be done. But at least some community attitudes. Some other things are, you know, I hear it all the time is when communities want to do community development and they want to build bike paths and they want to build parks and rec centers, and you have these guys out there saying, this is Wyoming. Look outside the window. We got 500,000 acres of wide open spaces. What do you need a dang rec center for? Or what do you need a bike path for? Well, because those companies are bringing executives and their families here who are used to throwing the family into, you know, getting on a couple bicycles, throwing the kids in that little thing that looks like a trailer, you know, behind a couple of Burley and going down a bike path 2 or 3 miles to an ice cream store, or going out and getting a $6 cup of coffee, which, you know, most people in Wyoming scratch their head and say, $6 for a cup of coffee? Are you kidding me? You know, but this is what those people are looking for. They're also looking for some other amenities. You know, because if I'm an executive and I'm going to bring my wife and my family here, there's got to be things that they need. So our school systems have to be top notch. You know, those shopping and commercial type of things, I don't think we'll ever meet that threshold. But at least we can help develop the mom and pop shops so they're viable and keep them so our business communities are functioning at the highest level they can. And those are directly affected by the commerce side of the Secretary of State's offices. how we do regulation and how we enforce it and how we work with the cities, towns, and counties and the other municipalities to all be on the same page to develop things like Main Street projects.
Let me ask you this. The business-friendly attitude has also done something else. It's brought in a lot of what we call shell companies and people that have essentially set up shop in Wyoming, but there's no physical presence. We've had, I had a conversation with Ed Murray about this a year or two ago, and then I've talked with past Secretary of States. It seems to be mixed reaction on whether or not that's a good thing. What's your view on that?
Well, you know, I've sat on corporations for 10 years, and the corporations is a legislative committee that has direct oversight over the Secretary of State's office. And so in creating this business-friendly environment, and we're trying to kick the door open as wide as we can, you know, sometimes you leave the door, you know, the door's unlocked. And there are always entities out there that are going to be unscrupulous characters, bad actors, and they're going to look for opportunity. And so, like a few other states, we left ourselves vulnerable to coming in and setting up these shell companies. But to, you know, to the help or, let me see, to the legislature for being on top of that, and the Secretary of State, we moved, recognized where those unlocked doors and windows, if you will, be, were in the building, allowing these companies to operate, and moved very rapidly. The first bill that we considered in corporations was to go in and rectify and get rid of all of those shell companies. And that was the first bill that we pushed through the legislative process and got to the governor's desk. And it was effective immediately on signature. So when we found those unlocked doors, we fixed them as fast as we can. So, and then fast forward a couple of years later, when version two of this popped up. Well, it's just like anything that there is. You don't know what the vulnerabilities are until somebody attacks it. You think that you have them all locked up, until somebody attacks it. They came back. We found out that there was more vulnerabilities. We repeated the process as fast as we could, keeping in mind that the legislature only meets once a year.
Right.
And just short of calling a special session, which I didn't think this warranted, we attacked it and fixed this as fast as we could the way that the government entities are set up in Wyoming. So, again, I think we have it under control. Well, I know we have it under control. The question is, what's the next vulnerability that the bad actors are going to find? And then how fast can we fix it before damage is done?
And I do know that there are people that believe that as long as it's not companies that are doing any wrongdoing, that having a bunch of so-called shell companies here in the state's a good thing because they're paying fees, they're doing all that, those kinds of things.
Well, I'm not opposed to companies coming and setting up their corporate entity in Wyoming. Those are the good actors. And, you know, this is where you have to have a division. And our business division is probably, I would say, they're one of the best in the country at sorting through this and figuring things out. This is how we found the vulnerabilities. This is how we plug the holes. There are legitimate companies who set up using that model. And we welcome them because they do come here and pay taxes and other fees. It's the ones who want to use this as a facade for running illegal activities behind it and other states or internationally. Those are the characters that we have to weed out. And it takes a little bit of diligence. You know, it also takes staff. So, you know, again, one of those people, I don't like to grow government, but if we don't have the proper size staff, we're not going to be able to find the bad actors inside the, you know, basically inside the bowl of good actors.
Let's talk a little election. During the Republican primary, as you well know, and I know you've been getting asked about this as you've traveled the state, is, you know, you had a lot of people that as they do all the time, there's a competitive election that flips sides, went from being registered as Democrats over to registered Republicans. You had independents, of course, that wanted to get in on it because it was an exciting election. I've read some comments that you've all made on this particular thing, and I thought I would ask you about it. I mean, is this a bad thing that people can flip at the polls? Is this something that needs to be fixed? Because I suspect there might be legislation coming on this.
There is legislation. There was legislation proposed in the last session that gladly went down in flames, and I hope that any proposed legislation on this goes down in flames. And here's my reasoning on it. As a candidate, I do all sorts of metrics on the demographics. And when you shift at the polls like this, we currently are available or are able to go in and change party at the polls, receive the ballot in the primary, vote that ballot, and then on the way out, we can change back. That takes all my statistical analysis and data that I have on the demographics and what I need to do and how I need to spend money and just throws it out the window. So from a candidate's perspective, it's kind of a nightmare. But getting by that, getting back to the bigger picture, okay? If you look at the intent of an election, and the pure intent of an election is for the public to go exercise their voice to vote for whomever they would like to vote for. It doesn't say anywhere that you're restricted to party. And back the original founding fathers and the original electoral process, we had Tories and Whigs and a bunch of other people that didn't fit in there. There was no requirement that you had to come in and vote a Tory ballot. The original founding fathers wanted what we call free and fair elections. So in keeping with that principle, it's only logical that if I walk up to the polls or I'm on my way to the polls and I hear on the radio or the TV some candidate has just irritated the bejesus out of me, I should be able to go in and vote what I would like to do relative to that at the polls. Regardless whether that's changing parties or not, I shouldn't be impeded by that. That should be my basically inalienable right attached to my ability to vote whatever ticket I want, whomever I want to, write in whatever I want to on the ballot, and call it a day. So that's kind of a long answer to your question, but I feel that we needed to respect that because it goes all the way back to the foundations of what we're based on as a country.
Some people would like it to be even easier to vote, mail-in ballots, whatever other options might be out there. Are you in favor of any of those kinds of things?
You know, mail-in ballots are great, but this is Wyoming, okay? Realistically, and we have discussed mail-in ballots for probably the last 4 years in the legislature, and here's my opposition to mail-in ballots. The Postal Service will not give us any sort of guarantee or priority on ballots inside the mail system. And I know every one of the people out there listening to this has had a problem where they've mailed in a utility bill or they've mailed in something and it takes 4 days, if not longer, to get something from Laramie to Casper. Or even worse, Laramie to Cheyenne, and it takes a week for that letter to get there. We're talking ballots who are time sensitive. If they're not in the possession of the county clerk by the time the polls close, that is a spoiled ballot and it's not counted. It is way too important in the electoral process to throw this to the fate of the Postal Service being diligent on delivering ballots. So until, you know, it works really fine in large metropolitan states where you have millions of people concentrated and you have a very tight postal delivery system with very efficient delivery mechanisms. We've got snow, we've got rain, we've got all sorts of things that just mess up mail in this state. So those are the factors that I look at when I weigh in on mail ballots. I'm not against mail ballots. The principle I really like, but the actual delivery on that is suspect to me.
What about online? Is there a concern there may be just some mischief there or somebody hacking?
Well, now, I'm a computer guy, and I have a strong computer background. online really intrigues me. And the thing that got me really fired up is about a month ago when they had the hackathon competition here on campus,
right,
where they invited all the guys to come in and develop some blockchain things. One of the apps that a local group developed was an LLC registration form on a blockchain operating system, if you will, which got me thinking, well, if they can do that in 48 hours, by the way, when elected, these guys are coming in first day one, because this is something that really intrigues me, is to get the technology rolling so that we can lead again. But let's take this to the vote. We have historically had a terrible problem with getting overseas ballots there and back before the election. If we could develop a ballot and put it on a secured blockchain platform and deliver that ballot, we could deliver it anywhere in the state, we could deliver it anywhere in the world at that point. And so that takes care of the question for all of our deployed individuals. We could get them a secured ballot. It would be back. We would never have to worry about counting military ballots again because of the level of security. The only thing that bothers me about being online is the level of security. And what I've learned about blockchain and am continuing to learn about blockchain, it is a hyper-secure platform. And so far, as to my knowledge, it has not been hacked.
And so you actually, it was on my list, but you're a big fan of the blockchain opportunities the state has.
Oh, absolutely. We, in the last session, Tyler Lenholm, Representative Lenholm, brought some legislation that helped facilitate the rulemaking and statutory apparatus that makes it available for blockchain companies to come here and develop and operate. The business codes were adjusted. The subordinate, or what we call the baby LLC rule, was adopted, which is the way that a lot of blockchain companies are structured. So again, we are out there in the forefront. Unfortunately, they're not kicking down the doors. They were really excited in the beginning, and that excitement has kind of subsided. The Secretary of State's office needs to fire that back up, that technology level, because this is one of those diversity aspects that Wyoming can seize. It doesn't require a lot of resources other than electricity, and we generate lots of electricity, and we do have the WAPA that runs through the state. And for those people that don't know, that's Western Area Power Association there. I think that's it. But anyway, it's a series of big, huge, redundant power lines that run through here. Guarantees us pretty much all the electricity that we'll ever need in this corridor. So that is what the blockchain and blockchain computer developers, data centers, and those kind of people require to do their jobs and develop. And so we have all of that set up. And interestingly enough is when I had to go to a conference in Salt Lake City, I was invited down to Salt Lake City to meet with the Salt Lake City area blockchain developers and spend an evening with them. And they're a fascinating group of people. They're located in Salt Lake City, and they're all just itching to do all of this development. And what I told them, they gave me a few minutes to speak. I said, you know, just 60 miles from here, we've got all the regulatory apparatus setting up for you. You can live down here in Salt Lake City and develop up in Evanston. We would love that. So bring your companies up to Evanston, and we'll help you develop, and you can develop for the Salt Lake Basin. You know, and they're computer people, so they didn't see the geographic disconnect. But once I put those two dots together for them, there were lots of lights that went on. And I would not be surprised if you see some companies move to the Evanston area to incorporate and set up their blockchain development, but they're actually located down in Salt Lake because that's the metropolitan area they would serve. Mm-hmm. And I'm okay with that.
Last thing for you, the Taylor Haynes situation, which may be resolved at least criminally or whatever right now, did strike. It interested me in the fact that the Secretary of State's office may or may not have the ability to determine if somebody is a qualified candidate. That strikes me as something that should be fixed. What do you think about that?
Oh, well, you brought up a topic that I've successfully sidestepped until this point in the campaign. I have my own personal opinions about the way that was handled, and then I have legislative opinions. So I'm going to try to stay somewhere between candidate and legislative opinions.
And staying out of personalities altogether and maybe even avoiding this particular case. But it does seem that, you know, if you've got a county clerk that has some concerns about this, this should be something it would strike me that the Secretary of State's office should be able to investigate.
Well, here's where the system has fallen down. The county clerk had reservations about a candidate and eligibility. The Corporations Committee, like I said, that I sit on, met at least twice after we met twice around the time that the filing period closed. So the writing was on the wall. At that point, the Secretary of State, who is in charge of all of the elections, and from the Secretary of State's office, we certify the elections. Coming up from the certification level at the counties, we certify those counties within the state apparatus statutorily as that election being completed and legitimately sound, and, you know, that's what it's going to be, writing it in stone at that point. So giving that charge of the Secretary of State's office, making that call is probably on the periphery of where the Secretary of State should be. That should be a determination that comes down on the county clerk level. But the Secretary of State's office should be working directly with the county clerk when those are brought up. And if there's any additional, you know, information or discussion needed, that's where the Legislative Oversight Committee should come in and give guidance. And none of those things were brought through those channels. As far as I sit on corporations, we never talked about any candidate's eligibility in the entire year. In fact, we still haven't talked about any candidate's eligibility. The county clerks were in front of us they're in front of us every time we meet in some way, shape, or form. So the venue was there for discussion. In my point or my opinion as a legislator, once you certify candidates as eligible, you have started to close the door, okay? When you open the polls for voting and early voting started, you have locked the door. Regardless, eligibility questions are off the table, in my opinion, at that point. You have voters that are actually casting votes, and you have given them a list of candidates. To disqualify a candidate after that violates every tenet that I know about state government and policy and just the values that we hold as Americans and as citizens of this state. So it runs very deep within my consciousness and person that we should have never got to that point. And after that door was shut, the discussions become mute. Too late. You know, the train's left the station. I'm sorry you feel that way. You know, regardless whether Taylor lives in Colorado or Wyoming, he was on the ballot. And if he would have got elected, in my opinion, that would have been a valid election.
Maybe one final thing. I know you wanted to have an opportunity to talk a little bit about your views on coal. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. I'm a Democrat. And I love coal. And one of the reasons I know there's probably people out there gasping and dropping their coffee right now. But one of the reasons that is because I got an education at the university in geology, geophysics, and computer science. My first job was in the oil business doing oil and gas exploration. They bought me my first house. So given that as a background, how can I not love coal? The other side of that is coal is where we make our money in the state of Wyoming currently, presently. But just like anything else in business, it's running its course. Okay. The favorability of using coal as fuel is really waning. You can throw if you took every rule and restriction off of coal right now, that as a fuel source would probably be dead in the next 10 years. So this is what we need to do as a state. We need to get off of the coal for fuel and get into some other markets with it. It is possible, technologies exist, where we can get in there and take the coal streams and develop them through processing into other petrochemicals, for PVCs, for plastics, for cosmetics. I got this idea from a Chinese businessman who was here touring our coal fields and looking at our infrastructure, and he asked me basically how much we get for a ton of coal, and we said, well, it's about $12. And he told me that his company that makes PVC pipe, which uses coal as part of their input stream, they get $2,000 a ton. This was a couple years ago. So, you know, I took a business class here at the university, and I didn't do very well in it, but the light went on. $12 versus $2,000. Maybe we need to rethink the markets that we're in. So after some investigation, I see that the possibilities out here are virtually endless if we get out of the fuel market and we can create, you know, the substrates and the input products for cosmetics, PVCs, plastics, and whatever else that you can imagine. And these are not affected by the cyclic energy boom bust cycle. I hear candidates right now saying we need to prepare for the bust. When coal busts, we need to tighten our belts. We need to cut. No, that's the wrong attitude. We need to use our intellect and our abilities to go into a totally other market, create a market, own that market, and get revenues. And what this does is it creates two additional revenue streams that we don't have already. And with the mining of coal, it probably will triple, if not even more, the amount of coal that we need to mine to do this. We'll still get the severance. We'll get this. It creates jobs. It gives us some stability in our own economy and in our own destiny. And this is really, really passionate to me. And you ask, well, what is Secretary of State? It's not in the Secretary of State's purview. But the Secretary of State sits on the SLIB.
Yep.
The SLIB is responsible for infrastructure and around the state and a few other boards. Very influential on how businesses and business entities and talking to those business entities, again, and getting them interested. Remember the disconnect between our statutory environment and actual businesses. That's part of bridging that gap and bringing that together. And what we can do right there is put Wyoming back on a stable economic basis, which is away from the boom and bust cycle. And, you know, if there's one thing that I really do want to do is get us so that we are not economically dependent on somebody in the Middle East having a bad day.
Jim Bird, always a pleasure. Good luck with the campaign, and thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Bob.